Good afternoon, everyone, wherever you are listening to us live or on the archive. This is Through the Keyhole, coming to you from Rochester, New York, between the Great Lakes and the Finger Lakes. I'm your host, Karen Dolan, and I want to thank you today for joining me on the Paranormal Radio Network. I want to hear from you during the course of the show. If you're listening live, join us on the message board to discuss the program and add your questions and comments. Go to ParanormalRadioNetwork.com to join us on Pell Talk. If you don't have Pell Talk yet, you can download it for free at www.paltalk.com. That's P-A-L-T-A-L-K.com. You can also email me with your questions and comments at kdolan@rochester.rr.com. You can also call into the show toll-free at 1-877-786-0562. I'm going to apologize right now. I've got a little bit of a cold today because it's January and I'm in upstate New York and that's just the way it is. So I'm hoping my voice is coming across okay. Today's guest is, I'm really proud to say, is a good friend of mine personally. And I have to say that my kids both say hello too. They were very excited when I heard that we were going to be doing this interview today. Paola Harris is an internationally renowned journalist who has met many researchers and experiencers of UFO phenomena. While she doesn't view herself as a UFO experiencer, she does recognize the pattern of coincidences or synchronicities that characterize her intuitive decisions. With a busy schedule and a limited budget, she still manages to travel great distances under improbable conditions to arrange interviews with credible persons who report incredible experiences. Like most UFO investigators, she began with a curiosity about the physical conditions that might identify an unidentified flying object. Now, like most seasoned investigators, she's fascinated by the psychic connection. Oops. I'm sorry, slight technical problem here. She's fascinated by the psychic connection of humanity and extraterrestrial communication. This has led her to write two books on the subject of extraterrestrial life. The second book also discusses the question of how to establish peaceful relations with extraterrestrials, and is provocatively titled, How Do You Speak to a Ball of Light? I love that title. Paola will be presenting at the MUFON conference in Atlantic City next month, that's February of 2008, and then a week later at the International UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada. She's also a regular presenter at the X Conference in Gaithersburg, Maryland, right outside Washington, D.C., and we'll be speaking there again this April, I believe. Right, Paola?
No, not this year, because I'm in Italy during that.
Oh, you're not going to be?
Yeah.
I was sure you'd be at the X Conference again.
No.
You'll be in Italy again.
I'm in Italy.
Oh, my gosh. What are you doing in Italy this time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to go back and forth every now and then.
Yeah.
In fact, the thing is that I'm really an international journalist, and if I don't do international, I don't get what's going on in, you know, on the other side of the pond.
Oh, so we don't get you for all the conferences, then?
No. Well, the two big ones, you know, I've done the X conference, several times, but I guess Paul Hellyer, ex-minister of defense, and Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who are my favorite people, are at the X conference, and someone named Richard Dolan. Now, who's he?
Some guy, you know.
Some guy. He's wonderful. I mean, Richard is incredible and a great spokesman for us. And in any case, I'm doing a lot of traveling, Karen, so that I will be going to Hawaii on May 18th for the transformational conference that Dr. Michael Sala is doing, 18th through 20th. And so I will be on the Big Island doing that.
Ooh, that sounds wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, aside from being in Hawaii, that just sounds like a fascinating conference.
Well, it's exopolitics, and that's really what I'm about. You know, I have this essay called, Taking Ufology Out of the Dark Ages, because I have this feeling that we left sightings a long time ago. We're way past that. There's much more going on. If the alien is in your living room, we're way past the sighting stage. And if we have cases like Virginia in Brazil, and I talk about that in my book, Exopolitics, How Do You Speak to a Ball of Light? And if we're having the ball of light phenomenon in Sicily, that we're way past the sighting stage. So now I've kind of graduated into exopolitics.
Now, when you talk about exopolitics, a lot of people probably who are listening to this program might not be aware really what that term means. And I have to say that I've heard a lot of people use the term, and they all seem to be using it in different ways. How would you define the term exopolitics?
Yeah, okay. Exopolitics is the study of the extraterrestrial presence on the planet, the study of the presence. That means that all they're already here. It's not about whether we're looking at lights in the sky. And the word "the study," it means that it is a serious academic study, like exobiology that Carl Sagan used to do. Carl Sagan was a biologist, and at Cornell University, he started a course in exobiology, which meant biology from other planets. So exo means out of this planet. It's just the study of the extraterrestrial presence and all the related events, all the supposed related interaction these beings have had with humanity, and you knowing that the contact scenario is real. These beings have had contact with humanity, I suppose, for sure, from the testimony we've heard now. But if you want to go and play the game even farther, then we need to go back to the times of antiquity with the Sumerians, the Egyptians, and Atlantis and all of that. It gets really tricky. So whatever is out there is not just visiting us now.
Yeah, so ufology, to many people who are just coming into contact with it for the first time, it's all about lights in the sky. And it's all about, you know, seeing these lights moving and saying, is that or is that not the planet Venus? And
that's
gone
true.
So far past that.
Yeah, we have, Karen, you know Robert Sala, who was a military man who was present at the shutdown of the missiles at Malmstrom Air Force Base, I think it was the 70s. And he was really present when 10 Minuteman missiles were shut down because he was in charge of being underground and pressing the button. Now, we had two of those incidents at Malmstrom. And so when we have incidents like that in the Rendlesham Forest case in England, where the UFO actually came down, and we have physical traces and everything on those cases, we're not talking about lights in the sky. We're talking about an interaction with extraterrestrials that are dismantling Minuteman missiles, and this really did happen. All the paperwork for that is on Robert Salas's website. And the Rendlesham Forest case, Nick Pope talks to us about that. These things really did happen, and these things are not just lights in the sky. They're interacting with our military bases, with our nuclear capacity, and, you know, what they're doing is they're here. And when you have one over O'Hare Airport, and we've got military, the United Airlines people seeing it, plus pilots that are landing, taking pictures of this thing, we're not talking about lights in the sky anymore. For people who don't know, when the O'Hare incident happened, it happened in November. It happened November 7th of 2006. It wasn't reported until January on CNN. But these are real situations. I mean, it's past lights in the sky. We've got a UFO over a major airport.
Mm-hmm. And that was, the people who saw that did report it right away, but they were told not to talk about it.
Well, it gets tricky. They were told not to talk about it or they'd lose their jobs.
Right.
So they waited until, who blasted that open, and I'm really proud of the Chicago Tribune, is the Chicago Tribune. If the Chicago Tribune hadn't done the story, nobody would have been able to cover it. And they did the story. They made it legitimate so that, you know, people like Anderson Cooper talked to people that were in the United Airlines terminal. And, you know, and also we have James Fox, the producer of Out of the Blue, that's speaking to some of the pilots. And, you know, there is photo footage out there, and there will be more things coming. We have to wait for years here, but, you know, there will be proof. There were enough witnesses to see that to know that was real. But, Karen, you know, the exopolitical part, and this is probably what your listeners need to know, is in my book, I have a chapter where it says, is that our stuff or their stuff? Because I have kind of a feeling that we are capable of replicating some of this technology, and it gets so tricky that we can't tell the difference, and that's the exopolitical part. You know, what are we looking at? Advanced technology that comes out of Area 51? Or are we looking at alien spaceships?
Well, that, yeah, that's one of the big questions to anyone who's spent any time researching this, is not the existence of these things, but are they here from elsewhere, or is this something that we've copied or that we've developed that just happens to be similar to what is here from elsewhere? I see your point, though, when you're talking about we have evidence that these beings from elsewhere are here. They are definitely here. They've been seen, and they're affecting things like our weapon bases. We need to establish some sort of relationship with them. We need to do something to establish peaceful relations, hopefully. And it's really fascinating to me that they're showing us that they can turn off our weapons, but they do it without hurting anybody. Like, if we were more mature, maybe we could figure out how to do that, too.
Yeah, that's a fascinating part. When you said without hurting anybody, it's really interesting. I'm positive that they're also connected with major blackouts of entire cities. And I think it was in New York years ago. In one particular year, I think it was like 2001, we had a blackout in New York. We had a blackout in Europe that lasted almost 48 hours. There was a blackout in Australia. There was a blackout in England. And it was all in one year. And I'm wondering who was doing that. How could all these power lines go down all at once? Yeah. The blackouts or you know, the flyovers like O'Hare don't constitute hostile activity. It's not hostile. I mean, because, you know, they didn't do anything. But it does constitute a matter of national security. And that's where I think Richard, who's doing such an incredible job, is going. I mean, I think when you look at national security, you must admit that there are UFOs. I mean, this is national security. They may not be hostile, but, you know, they are doing things to make themselves known. And when they want to make themselves known, I don't think they're here on vacation.
Yeah, I don't think they would be coming in and turning off our missile sites if they were here for nothing. Well, what do you think they're here for?
Well, I don't know. There's a couple of things. I do a presentation, which is really interesting because I've tried to decide this. There was a slide that Jaime Maussan, who is a researcher from Mexico City, showed. He showed it in Italy, and he showed it at Laughlin, that had a cross. It was 8 UFOs in the form of a cross over St. Petersburg, Florida, 2 weeks before Katrina. And that, I don't think those were Christian aliens necessarily. I think the cross was a symbol to tell us something was happening. And then I have a very close friend, Esen Sekerara from Turkey, who told me that there was incredible UFO sightings in near Istanbul, near and other places in Turkey, just before their devastating earthquakes. And we know for a fact, Jaime told us that in Mexico City they appeared during the eclipse of the sun. So I'm looking at when they appear, at what time, you know, in what place, and I'm wondering what's going to happen next. Because I think also that we're coming across a really interesting period of history. And the only way, without coming down and just looking at us and talking to us, and we'd probably be scared to death, the only way they can kind of tell us to wake up, like a wake-up call, is to start appearing at very key places all over the planet. And also, if you look at where it all began in 1947 with Roswell, there is no doubt in most researchers' mind that it's tied up with the nuclear problem, that we're causing some ourselves possible devastation if we continue with our development of nuclear weapons. So I think that, you know, in a way, it's without beating you over the head with the truth, they're telling planet Earth, you got problems, probably going to be, apart from the fact you have these wars, watch out for the nuclear problem, and ecologically, you're doing yourselves in. I mean, earthquakes don't just happen. They happen from drilling and from all kinds of other things that go on under the ground, blasting and all this other kind of stuff. So I think that it's kind of warning us without beating us over the head. I think here we're dealing with like a prime directive like they have in Star Trek, where they can't just come down and tell you, but they let you understand what's happening.
It's interesting that you brought that up about the nuclear connection to Roswell. I was just looking over one of your books, your first book, Connecting the Dots, in which you talked about Colonel Corso giving you some information about Roswell, and he seemed to indicate that the Roswell crash was actually caused by a sort of electromagnetic disturbance. And the impression I got was it was something that we caused. It was something that we had built that caused this problem.
Yeah, he said that our radars brought these craft down. They were very powerful, but he also told me that there was so many bleeps on the radar during the development of the atomic bomb in White Sands, at the White Sands, missile range at the Trinity site. They had seen them way before the Roswell crash. They saw them come up on their radar, and they saw them, a lot of them, come up on their radar. And so the fact that we had those, the one or two that crashed in the New Mexico area, is no big, surprise. Somebody is watching what the kids are doing, and we're the kids, and we developed this horribly powerful, weapon that could destroy not only the planet, but go into the realm of dimensional, repercussions. And if these people or these UFOs are coming dimensionally, whatever we put off or, set off like a bomb is going to go into their realm. But Colonel Corso told me that. He told me that they were watching that. He told me about the radar. But the thing that I have in my book, which is astounding, and it comes out of the Majestic documents, is a letter that Oppenheimer and Einstein wrote to Truman about the visitations after their testing, the atomic bomb. They said, look, these people are coming. These UFOs are coming, and what do you want to do about it? It's like the exopolitical question of all times. He suggested, Einstein and Oppenheimer also, that we institute kind of a super United Nations to deal with contact with these people, because, they said if these people have culture, or these things have culture, and they want to come here, we need to not ignore it. We need to get ready for it. And that particular document is on Ryan Wood's website under Majestic Documents. It's the letter that Einstein and Oppenheimer wrote to Truman. And that made me really think that in my new book, I needed to put together some possible protocols. I think I have 9 of them in there.
Wow. I haven't had a chance to read your newest book yet. I was looking for it today. And I was able to reread over Connecting the Dots, which is an absolutely wonderful book. I really enjoyed that. And it was fun for me because I've heard you talk about meeting a lot of these people, and then here was your written description of meeting some of the researchers who are in here, and then also your actual interviews with them.
Yeah, I have everybody from Richard Hoagland to David Icke to Linda Moulton Howe to Richard Boylan to just all of them in there, and Michael Wolff. And, I got to say, though, that I am going to be re-releasing that book. I am re-releasing that book at Laughlin. It's going to be called A Revised Version of Connecting the Dots, different cover, and it'll be brand new. I mean, it'll have, like, a new format, and I will add a couple of interviews. I'll add the Jesse Marcel interview and one with John Mack. So I'm re-releasing that because that's about 4 years old. But the thing that's good about that book, Karen, is that also, and you're aware of this, I do word-for-word interviews, so it's whatever they said to me. Whatever they said to me, so it's like the reader needs to connect the dots. I didn't connect any dots. You get the 26 interviews and, whoever's reading it, and they decide what's happening here.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. There's a sense of immediacy. It's like I'm sitting in the room with you listening to this conversation. And I really enjoyed have a feeling like that while I was reading the book. It wasn't like your account of the conversation with your analysis added in. It was, it's like I'm sitting there with you listening to it.
Well, thank you. It's like that's my job, though. I tell everybody else's story, you know. I mean, Colonel Corso was so important to me because I was very close to him, and he told me quite a bit, and there's a sounding interview in that book where he talks about contact, and that's what this show is all about. And he really knew that abductions were real, that implants were real. He said the Army didn't want to do anything about it because they want to put money into it, that the Army's big chief goal was to develop weapons of war. So that, you know, the money went into the back engineering, and of course the money wasn't like they didn't give them a check. They didn't give a check to these big establishments to back engineer the alien artifacts. What they did is they walked over, he walked over with an envelope full of cash. You know, it was like there would be no paper trail. It's like, here's some fiber optics. They didn't know it was fiber optics, I think, at the time. Here's how they work. Try to figure it out. We need them. Do them for the Army first and then give them to the American people. And this is what he told me, and he did. Now, that the implications of that are incredible, Karen, because if that's what they did, if that's what Colonel Corso did in the 60s, then that's one of the reasons why I guess we don't want to share any of this technology with anybody, and I guess that might be one of the reasons why the UFO stuff doesn't come out.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah, everybody thinks it's a fear factor. I don't think it's a fear factor. I think people, you know, especially kids, they're kind of ready. Whatever they're ready. We're ready to deal with something like this if we're given all the real truth. But you know, if somebody's keeping the technology on the back burner and is like profiting it from it or wanting it, it's like an ace in the hole. That's, I think, one of the reasons. And there's only, I think this is the country that's doing that. I don't think that other countries have this technology yet, although they may have made some deals or whatever. I think that other countries are making an effort at disclosure. I think they're making an effort to use the word UFO without attaching the word little green men, which makes me really happy.
Yeah. It is just one of the things I've noticed in the coverage of the recent sighting in Texas. Now, Rich and I were talking about that the other day, that this gets mentioned, it gets recorded all around. But, you know, it's the first time that I've heard these stories coming out, and they actually sound like a news story. They're talking about credible people who believe they saw something. And the news stories don't come out and say, well, you know, we're being invaded by aliens or they're all here to eat our brains or anything. They come across sounding like here are a large number of intelligent people who have seen something that they can't understand. And when asked, the Air Force says, well, you know, it sounds like commercial aircraft. And then these people say, well, I know what commercial aircraft looks like, and it didn't look like that. And, you know, you're left feeling like, gee, maybe there is something to this. I mean, not us, because you and I have been in this long enough that we're pretty sure there's something to it already. But I'm trying to look at these news stories from the point of view of someone who doesn't know anything about UFOs, who hasn't really been researching it, and whose only exposure in the past has been the kind of news stories where they end up chuckling about it at the end, which is all of them. And I was really impressed that they actually seem to be giving a fairly positive slant, at least the few that I've seen. You know, people have been sending me links to news stories, so maybe I'm only getting the best ones. But can you talk a bit about the sighting in Texas in Stephenville?
Well, yeah, I'm going to talk about all of that right now, because I've been researching the sightings from 2008 now, and I got to honestly tell you that there was a sighting on January 1st, about half an hour after midnight, with film footage in San Diego, and the only way I got the film footage was I got it from Italy. They sent it to me from a newspaper called Rede UFO, and I got this film footage, and it was Fox News of San Diego County talking about this sighting, which were 9 bright lights. They look like flotilla. And right away when I got it was like on an Italian YouTube, the the report. I called George Neary from Coast to Coast, and we did a show about the San Diego sighting that did have film footage with it. Not only that, what happened is all the people around that area saw it. So that radio station got all people calling. It was like the Phoenix Lights. Now, that wasn't given as much coverage as the Stephenville, Texas UFO sighting, which really makes me wonder. And then right after that, you know, around the 8th, here we have Stephenville, Texas, or I think it was the 18th, Stephenville, Texas, and we have witness testimony. It's amazing, and I'm positive they're telling the truth. But we have a Larry King Live show about a sighting that doesn't have film footage with it. And I'm wondering to myself, okay, now somebody's guiding this media-wise. Nobody, because I've got to tell you, I just did a conference in San Diego on the 21st on Martin Luther King's birthday, and I was in San Diego at an auditorium, and we looked at the film footage, and other people had pictures, and that was a major case. But it's not being looked at like the Stephenville case. So I'm beginning to wonder about that. I believe the Stephenville case, and I know it, but why is the San Diego case not being talked about?
Could it be that the evidence is just too good? I guess there's still some level of deniability in the Stephenville case, although I don't think there is much.
No, there isn't much, but maybe what they saw was our stuff. And I thought maybe if they're looking at our technology, then somebody is making a big media event to prepare people to believe that this huge mothership is there. And if it's our technology, could we be preparing people to believe we're into a space war? Because if that thing is our stuff that they saw, and they invent some kind of strange space war, we're not going to be known who we're shooting at.
Yeah.
And this is, it seems far-fetched, but this was a question that was asked of me, even by George Neary. He said, do you think somebody's preparing to let the people on Earth, in other words, they'll do disclosure, but then they'll go and say, oh, well, we're going to have an invasion. Yeah, that's a possibility. I'm going to go there. That's a possibility. And how do you start that? By making these stories be real, but there's no photograph, and there's no movie. And this makes me wonder. And, of course, now the military was involved because there were two F-16 jets, and now they're saying there were like 8 F-16 jets, and then it gets really tricky, and it's so confusing. The good part about it is the awareness that UFOs are real. That's the good part. The bad part about it is we don't know if that's our stuff or their stuff.
And it makes a big difference. As you said, I mean, we don't know if whatever's up there is there for peaceful reasons. We don't know if it came from elsewhere for, you know, in order to make war on us, or if it came from elsewhere and intends to be peaceful, or if it's from here pretending to be an outside threat in order to make an excuse for a war. Gosh, like we've never done that before. You know, it's bewildering. It makes your head spin after a while. No wonder a lot of people don't get into this, because it's a huge question. It's this burning question. What is going on out there? What are they? Where are they from? Why are they here? And we just don't have enough information.
No,
you know, Rich
don't.
Described once, he said ufology is like trying to do a jigsaw puzzle when you've got this box of pieces and half of the pieces of your puzzle have been taken out and, you know, half those pieces of a different one were thrown in. And then while you're doing it, you've got somebody standing over you yelling at you that you're doing it wrong. And I think that's the best description of ufology I've ever heard.
Who said that?
Rich.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's just
I loved it.
No, that's brilliant. Yeah. You can also mention to Rich that could be a reason why there's so much publicity around the Stephenville and nothing around the San Diego. You should see there are people that came up to me in San Diego with stories about sightings over the ocean. I mean, they had real sightings. One of the people that saw that New Year's Eve one was Lisa Davis, and you know her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
she
was a witness to that. She was on the news.
Wow.
She was on the San Diego channel. she of all people that knows the difference between UFOs and they said they were like lanterns. I mean, I was playing around with these lanterns in Ireland with Yvonne Smith was with me at the UFO Society Irish conference, and we were on a boat, and they set up these Chinese lanterns, and we saw them go up, and I photographed them so I could tell the difference between the UFO and the Chinese lantern. And there is a big difference.
Yeah, I imagine.
A UFO and the Chinese lantern. So the final, you know, the jury is out, and I guess they finished it off by saying they're Chinese lanterns. But if you go on my website, www.paolaharris.com, you will see the film footage of these flotilla. I call them the flotilla because as soon as I saw the nine lights and they all traveled evenly across the sky, I called Jaime Maussan in Mexico. You know, I called him right away and I said, look at this film footage. Does this look like a bunch of balloons or Chinese lanterns? And he said, no, no. He said, I have three other films just like this from Baja California, he said, and that area in near Mexico and California border. He said, I have other movies like this, other videos like this. And you know, recent ones, like the end of 2007. So there are sightings down in that area. Now, what would happen? I don't know what's going to happen. I'm hoping that they're not like the one in St. Petersburg, Florida, that are, you know, announcing Katrina. I'm hoping they're not announcing some kind of, earthquake or something. But certainly somebody should be paying attention. Nine UFOs on New Year's Eve are not partying up there. You know, they're basically flying across the skies. And there were the film footage, you can hear the people talking. They're like yelling and screaming, look, look, look. You know, it's and what surprises me is all the media attention around Stephenville.
Yeah, why do you think that could be happening?
Because Stephenville could be a preparation for our things, for whatever it was. Cause, you know, in other words, it could be that Stephenville is real, or it could be that someone is deciding to make that legitimate. I mean, I don't think that the news just woke up one morning and decided, okay, well, you know, we're going to report UFOs and not talk about little green men. Something has turned in the tide to make that legitimate, to make the Stephenville case with MUFON reporting and everything else legitimate. So is that going to be the beginning of treating this legitimate? If it is, there must be a reason for it. And I don't think that the reason for it is that everybody became enlightened. I think there's a reason because they're setting up a situation. And this is the problem with this. I mean, I think Rich has asked this too, who's really behind the release of information? I know for a fact there's a slow process release of information. I could never have reported the stories I'm reporting today. You know, I mean, Mauricio Cavallo's story of the human-like aliens is on my website.
I wanted to ask you about that, too.
Yeah, and the one that came out in Italy about the base, underwater base, with human-type aliens on the Adriatic coast. You know, we couldn't have reported that. That happened in 57. There's no way. There's no way we could have done it in 57. So what happens is that now, in 2007, we're able to legitimately report these things because somebody's deciding that it's okay.
And that's what I can't quite get my mind around. I mean, I know we've all been talking about disclosure for years and the need for disclosure and will it happen and when will it happen. And some people say it won't happen at all. And you know, some people say this is the year. And there's always somebody who can find someone who will say it's going to happen this month or next month. Now, somebody always thinks it's about to happen. And I just can't quite get my mind around, well, could this be it? And maybe it is. Maybe this is the beginning of the climate change, that maybe 2008 is going to be the year when something actually comes out, when there are some admissions that, yeah, we know this is real. You know what I keep thinking, though, is how can anybody who's in power now really come out and admit to the reality of this, the UFO phenomenon, and that the government has known about UFOs? They had to have been in contact with some of them. There have to be some agreements in place, and they would have to admit that then abductions are real too, and that the government cannot stop them or won't.
And well, I don't know if you saw my interview with Colonel Corso. It's a DVD, but the text of that interview is in my new book, How Do You Speak to a Ball of Light? And the first thing that Colonel Corso says in that DVD, he says it comes out of his mouth. We in the Army knew that abductions were real, and we had the implants in our hands, but we did nothing about it because we weren't interested. We watched it. We did nothing about it because it didn't profit us, because we were looking at weapons of war. So this is what Colonel Corso said. He's not lying. He worked at the Pentagon. He basically told us this in Italy. We knew this was real. This interview was done in a hotel in Italy, in Rome. And so, yeah, this is real. The problem with admitting it, and I guess I believe what you believe, Karen, it's not going to come out of Washington, D.C. I don't care how many times we all go there. And it's not going to
keep trying.
Well, the thing is, I think, when do you realize that it may not even come out of the United States? I mean, I think a better bet would have been Canada. I mean, Canada at least, because we've got the Canadians who are reporting this in their paper, and we have the ex-Minister of Defense, Paul Hellyer. I don't think his being in... I'd like to see what the Washington Post is going to put when Paul Hellyer speaks at the X conference, because they certainly did a very stupid, stupid job for us in September, a very anti-intellectual article that had nothing to do with the fact that we had nearly every top researcher in the world there. We had Antonio Huneas from Chile. We had Gilles Bourdet from France. We had Jaime Maussan from Mexico. We had Nick Pope from Great Britain. We had Michael Sala from Australia and Alfred Weber from Canada. I don't know what else. And your husband, of course. And I don't know what happened. What's wrong with their brains when they're writing a stupid article to wrap up the meeting of so many intellectual and international researchers in one place? Because that was not a regular UFO conference. That was the United Nations of UFO.
Yeah.
And that was probably the most meaningful meeting I've ever been at in my life, because I could exchange stories from somebody from Chile, from somebody from Mexico, from somebody from France, and this is an international phenomenon. And in the end, I don't think that any... And in the end, when you have an article that reads like that one that read in the Washington Post, it completely shows how really ignorant the United States is on this. Because if that's what the United States can write, if that's the only thing that they can write, it really makes us look bad. And I was very disgusted with that, because we had put so much effort into that conference. And I when we talk about the government and or candidates, I don't think that they're going to take this on. I mean, this is my own personal opinion. I think Shirley MacLaine did more.
Yeah.
And Shirley MacLaine is not a senator or running for office. She's also on my website. I think Shirley MacLaine did more for the cause than even Kucinich or those guys.
Yeah.
They're afraid to talk about it. It's like, it's like they're probably using the thought that what you don't know won't hurt you. So it's better that you don't know. We're going to keep the kids, protected, and so we're all the kids.
That's well, then I just said it's insulting.
Yeah, so I mean, it's disrespectful.
People in our government are supposed to be elected by us. They're supposed to be representing us. They're supposed to be working for us, not treating us like idiot children, and not treating us like cannon fodder, and not treating us like these wallets that just open up and they can suck out whatever they can find in there and then toss us away when they're done, which I think is what they have been doing for the past several years. And, if things are going on like abductions, we have every right to know about it. We have every right to know what they plan to do about it to protect us. Now, you know, there's another option there, too, where some people will talk about this not as abduction, but as contact, and say that this is a good thing, which may or may not be. I mean, I personally think there's probably more than one race or species out there making contact with us, which actually makes the job of exopolitics that much harder. That just multiplies the difficulties, because now you can't come up with one method of dealing with everybody. Or actually, maybe you can. Maybe you have a way of determining what your relation is going to be. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, I think that's a really good question. You know, you really brought it to light here, because...
This is the stuff, I start thinking about this, and then I get into this quicksand here, and I just think there are too many options, and I don't have information to cover all these variables. And then I get tired, and I just want to stop thinking about it.
So many people just don't pick it up at all. Yeah, well, Joe Montaldo in the show, this show is about contact, is about this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're really good. You're a good interviewer because you
went
there. I mean, you took me around the block, Karen, and then you brought me there.
Oh, good.
I
don't start with a plan, can you tell? We just chat, and I just, you know, see where it heads.
Yeah, well, you brought me here. I mean, I could talk about a million things, other kinds of things, like, but you brought me to contact your abduction through the back door. You brought me in through the back door. Well, that's really good. But, okay, the thing about the species and all of that. First of all, I always took it for granted there were 50 different species, and that's what Colonel Corso told me there was.
Oh, he did?
50 different, yeah. He said that they were, and Clifford Stone told me this also. Clifford Stone, when he did crash retrieval, and he's brilliant. He's down in New Mexico and Roswell, and he did crash retrieval. He told me that he had seen when he went to do crash retrieval, he had seen not only the little biological entities that we call the extraterrestrial biological entities, or the grays that America tends to commercialize so that it scares the living daylights out of the average human. You know, let's put the face of the gray up there so when they look at that, they're so terrified that's all they think aliens are, right? They basically have commercialized it to such an extent where it's on ads or... You know, the one thing about the Stephenville, Texas thing bothered me is that right after the sighting, that I heard that they put a tinfoil hat on there, the cow that's the mascot of the town, and that the people are walking around with tinfoil hats, and then they're going to market these T-shirts. And this is exactly in America what keeps this secret, and in the ridicule factor, it's where we do it when we go do stuff like that. So the gray has been the archetypal alien, and that isn't the way it is. Colonel Corso told me that when he saw the autopsy of the extraterrestrial biological entity, and he said he saw the autopsies, I guess some of them were done at Bethesda, he said that they had a microchip in one eye and one in the forelobe brain. He said they were worried about who these extraterrestrial biological entities, which were created in the laboratory, were reporting back to. In other words, if you have a microchip, you're reporting back. You are created to fly a spaceship because humans can't do some of this stuff the way our body is made up. And you're reporting back to another civilization. And they were afraid, Colonel Corso told me, that the other ones would look just like us and could be, you know, mixed in the crowd. So what the story is with the abduction scenario is that part of it is a kind of cooperation, possibly with military. Part of it is another group of grays or Zeta Reticulans doing it. Part of it is just direct contact download, and I know that part because I've seen a lot of scientists who have told me they've had contact with light beings, and then they become formulas and very important downloads that they create then technology. So and then we have the 2007 and 2008 scenario of those that look like us. I have a fascinating interview with Timothy Good on my website, and you probably might know about that, where I asked Timothy Good about those that look like us and if he had ever met any. And he tells me that he was in a hotel in London one time and this very strange kind of person, very well-dressed, came in. And he had a feeling, just by the energy this person emitted, that he wasn't from here. And telepathically, Timothy Good asked the person, if he was not from this planet, would he put his right finger on the left side of his nose? And this person did that.
Oh, my gosh.
And when this person did that, you know, this was a telepathic message from across the hall. He was sitting in a lobby. I said to Timothy, well, what'd you do? And he said, oh, I was frozen. He said, I didn't know what to do. He didn't know how to react. He just sat there frozen. And then he said the person got up and walked out of the lobby. And then he told me about other cases where there were some human aliens that had interacted with the British government. Now, he said to read his book, Alien Bases, which I have here, Earth Encounters with Extraterrestrials, because he talks about these human-type aliens. So we have some incredible researchers, this one British, who's done research on the fact that we've been visited by more than just the gray Zeta Reticulans, you know, because that one is the one that scares everybody, so, you know, that we got to make sure that's out there. The thing is that even the Zeta Reticulans, I talked to Travis Walton about his encounter, and he told me that the ones that he saw aboard the ship, they were very benign. I mean, he said he jumped off the table, and they just walked out of the room. I mean, they just turned around and walked out. He said, well, then he saw the blondes. He said he saw the two, what he called the twins, or the blondes. And he said, and Travis and I have had intense conversations over this. He said, those people that were beautiful looking with blonde, blue-eyed hair were the ones that brought him down the ramp into what it looked like a military hangar. And he's very confused because he said it looked like our military hangar. So then we've got to open up the question of the interaction and the private interaction of, I hate to use the word government because I think the senators don't know about this, and I don't think the president and vice president know about this, but the interaction between that group, that shadow group that's dealing with the UFO phenomenon, and the aliens. I've got to look at the interaction there. So when we're talking about contact in the exopolitics terms, Karen, what we're doing now is trying to do a kind of meditative ESP type of contact, just saying to the beings, whoever they are, if you come in peace, we will be respectful. That's the only thing it says. I mean, the protocols we've developed in exopolitics is, if you come in peace, we can be respectful. We can't identify with you. We don't know what you're all about, but we can be respectful.
Yeah, I guess that's really as far as we could go at this point. I mean, the whole question is characterized by not having enough information, my point of view. Although maybe we probably have quite a lot more than we realize because of this ridicule factor and this whole campaign to keep everything separate, keep people from believing each other and pooling information. And then when information does get pooled, there's disinformation in there, so we really don't know. It's like Rich was saying about the puzzle pieces. You know, you pick up a piece and you don't know whether that piece goes to your puzzle or some other one.
Well, you just hit the nail on the head as far as the disinformation, because it gets to be a mass confusion. I mean, the thing, you know, that I will say, though, is, see, when I was explaining this just now, I mentioned three cases. I mentioned Clifford Stone, Travis Walton, and Timothy Good. And I teach online classes in exopolitics, and when you start studying these books, or when you start studying these cases, and when you read what they say, then you yourself can have some information to make some judgments about, and I really believe people should do that. But today, people don't want that. They want you to tell them. So what we have is a lot of researchers out there who've got it figured out, who are telling the people, and I feel like saying, no, you can't, don't do that. Just go read the book. Go read Timothy Good's book. Go read Travis Walton's Fire in the Sky, which he's re-releasing, by the way. And go read UFOs Are Real, Clifford Stone, and Colonel Corso's Day After. Go read that. And there is information. You just need to put together in your mind the history of what's happened until now. But don't just go up to a researcher. And a lot of them don't do their homework. and ask, oh, what's going on out there? Because that person's going to only have their own opinion, and they're not going to have, well, for instance, you know, the way Rich does things, he's a researcher where he reads and collects information and documents and so forth, and so he has a real informed opinion in his books. It's informed. He studies it, you know? And that's what exopolitics is. It's like taking an anthropology class and knowing all about, you know, Diane Fossey, the gorillas, and, you know, all the background of all the anthropological history of the planet. I think that the bottom line for ufology is for people to study it.
Yeah.
I mean, like you do anything in school. Don't go up to a researcher and ask them, because, you know, they just know their piece.
Right. Paula, I've got a couple people on the message board here who have their hand up, so they want to ask a question. And I'm thinking we might have time before we need to go to a break to get at least one of these questions in. So I'm going to ask Joe to take the first question from someone named Donabu, their username, and I'd love to hear what you have to say. Hear Donabu come on and tell us her question or comment. Hello, Donna? Oh, not getting anything.
Well, will it be a voice question or is
well,
it an interesting?
Well, we're trying to get the person on. Yeah, we're trying to get this person to actually come on to call in and come on with voice, but if that's not working, maybe Donna could type the question onto the message board.
Well, yeah, we can do that.
Well, there are two people here who have their hands raised, so if either of you, if a producer is able to get either of them on the phone or if they can type in their questions, we are going to have to go to break pretty soon. Maybe we should just take our break and hopefully that'll give us a minute to get this pulled together.
Okay.
Oh, got one. Okay.
Hi, Joe. I kind of talked about that case in that it surprises me that we're making such a big deal of that case that has no film footage. And we let the San Diego case go that has incredible film footage. And the San Diego case happened in January 1st, 2008. And I guess my comment was that somebody is guiding this disclosure. They're letting it happen. In other words, they're giving the okay to the radio stations to make a big deal out of it. Larry King Live is going ahead with that over and over again. So we're being prepared for something. My biggest comment with Karen was that are we being prepared to look at our stuff as hostile? And as far as the people that are doing the research, MUFON, yeah. I mean, finally, it's wonderful that we can recognize that there is a research group in the United States that has affiliates, and that's MUFON. And so MUFON is getting the credit it deserves for doing the research. Now, the problem that we have is you have to really value the witness testimony because there's no film footage. Your picture's here. And there are pictures with the O'Hare case that never came out. So is the rule of thumb we can cover cases where there's no footage or videos, and we're gonna cover those cases, but where there's real pictures, videos, and like the Phoenix Place, all kinds of videos, then we let that go? It makes me really wonder about that. But I really do herald MUFON and the people that are doing, and the journalist that is doing the good job down in Stevensville. Now, she just recently said that from all over the world, she's getting from Japan, from Europe, she's getting people coming down there to do the questioning. I just wish we had film footage.
That's really interesting. And when we go to break, I think I'm going to take a moment and check into this because I believe I heard something about video footage from Stephen Stowe. And I'm going to see if I can track that down while we are on break. And with that, we have been running over just slightly. But I wasn't going to say anything because that was my producer who asked the last question. So it's kind of your fault, Joe, that we ran over that time. So let's take our quick break now. It's actually going to be about 9 minutes, so if anybody wants to go grab a cup of coffee, now's the time to do it. And when we come back, we've got some more questions for Paula Harris about the Texas sighting, and also I had some other questions about the various races and the aliens who look like us, who are integrated in our society. So we will be back shortly. This is Through the Keyhole. I'm your host, Karen Dolan, and my guest today is Paula Harris, international journalist. And we are talking about UFOs and aliens. Don't miss it. Hi, welcome back to Through the Keyhole on the Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, Karen Dolan, and my guest today is international journalist Paula Harris. Paula is going to be presenting at a couple of conferences next month, February 2008. She will be talking at the New Jersey MUFON's inaugural Northeastern Conference in Atlantic City, and she'll also be presenting at the International UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada, the week after. Now, I understand, Paula, correct me if I'm wrong here, but you're going to be presenting on a similar topic on both of these. You'll be talking about the human-type aliens who are integrated among our society, all right?
Yeah, well, I Laughlin, I'll be talking about that because they're interested in the contact scenario. But in the MUFON at the New Jersey one, I'll be speaking about that, but also everything that's happened in 2007 and 2008 and how we have to start connecting the dots because with the Larry King Live specials, with, you know, Shirley MacLaine coming out, with the X Conference, with the international researchers, something is happening. So I'll be talking about that in New Jersey.
Fantastic. Wow. There is a lot going on this year, isn't there?
I mean, well,
you know, we're still in January.
It's okay.
Yeah. But we were just talking about the sightings that have just come out in the last, well, within the past year or so. There have been a lot of really well-documented sightings. And these sightings are coming out in the news now. And then you were telling me about the one that maybe hasn't been in the news very much, but it is very well-documented, the one from San Diego, from New Year's Day.
Yeah, we covered that on Coast to Coast with George Nuria. And we had a lot of San Diego people get back with us. They had seen this. It was like the Phoenix Lights. It was on New Year's Eve. I mean, New Year's Day, early in the morning. And if people want to see that, go on my website, www.paolaharris, and look at the footage.
Now, I've got your website pulled up, and where do I find the footage on the?
You go down to San Diego. There's it says that Lights Over San Diego. It should have the video.
I see, they have that down all the way. I see breaking news.
Yeah. Down farther.
Down. UFOs in Turkey.
No, it's right at the top, at the very top.
Right at the top.
It should be
it's
there.
There's so much cool stuff on here.
Well, it reads
holy cow.
It reads like an online magazine, okay? So
it
I have
is.
A picture,
is
and then there's the story, and, you know, it's like an online magazine for people that want to know the latest.
Well, here's Larry King, November 10th. Here's CNN video of the Washington Press Conference.
No, it's close to the top, the very top. It should be.
Oh, Fox News report of San Diego mass UFO
sighting
on New Year's
Day. Click on that and look at these things. People are yelling and screaming. Like,
wow.
they're in the sky. I told you that I also contacted Jaime Maussan, who has other footage. So,
uh-huh.
You know, here we are. We got flotilla in San Diego.
Like, oh, my gosh.
We got them here, you know, so here they are. What can I say? So people in San Diego have seen a lot of craft over the ocean, and now they're coming forth, and they're talking about it, which is, you know, which is cool. And the one in Texas, you know, that's made all the major news, and I'm wondering where that's going. I'm, you know, the whole world is covering that, and at least they're taking witnesses seriously.
Yeah.
I believe those people are telling the truth.
Yeah. Now, I said before the break that I was going to check on the possibility of some video or some pictures existing from the Texas case. You are absolutely right. There is none. Apparently, there was an unsubstantiated video that someone gave to one of the major witnesses, and he said, you know, whoever this person was, gave one of the witnesses this video and said, here, I saw what you saw, and I took a picture of it. But I guess MUFON has been checking out this video, and no one is really convinced that it is anything. So we don't know if it's a hoax or a mistake or what it is, but I thought I had heard something about pictures or video, and that was the one I had heard of, so it's not really anything we can rely
on. Yeah, but one of the witnesses, and I don't know what his name is, had taken a video of a UFO like the year before, and that's on YouTube, and that's real. I saw that video.
Yeah.
It was months before, but he did take a video of a UFO, and it's the same witness that saw this one, too. It's a matter of doing, like, heavy investigation, but I just saw that out of another... In other words, I'm getting my information from Europe. It's really strange. I don't know how to tell you. But from Europe, they're sending me to Stephenville saying with other kinds of news. So I've got, from all over the world, journalists that are contacting me about a lot of these cases, so I get an overall perspective.
Boy, what does that say about state of American journalism, though? The only news we get about these things comes out of Italy.
Well,
Italy's
YouTube had no problem with putting the Fox report on there. I mean, that's how I got it. Libero, it's the name of... When you see this footage, you'll see that it comes from Libero. It's a kind of an Italian YouTube. And they have a lot of different reports that people have never seen before on that particular, internet site, this Libero. But I don't know what to say because... I think it'll probably get better. I'm hoping it'll get better. I think the breakthrough was Larry King Live in November. And since I brought James Fox to Italy about 4 days before he appeared on Larry King Live, I was able to see that with the help of Fife Symington, you know, the governor of Arizona who finally came clean, with the help of Fife Symington and the Larry King people, James Fox, who is not a ufologist, he is not a UFO researcher. He's a documentary maker, was able to blow open the UFO question. I mean, that the shows with James Fox on them are the shows that are getting reported to Larry King Live, and James Fox is using a very logical point of view. He doesn't know what's going on. He hasn't figured it out yet, and he and Stanton Friedman did an amazing job on the Stephenville case, and when Larry King took this on, I saw that the tide was turning. So I don't know if you feel the same way, Karen, but the tide is turning. I just don't know to what avail. In other words, I don't know why. I don't believe something is for nothing, and I do believe somebody's directing this show.
It does seem that way. It just feels different. You know, when this whole Texas story came out, when I first heard about it, I thought, oh, here we go again, you know, and I was waiting for the giggle factor to kick in, and it never really seemed to come. I mean, I heard one local radio program here in Rochester. In fact, they invited Rich to come out to the station and do a little spot where they talked about this UFO sighting, and they also got one of the main witnesses, and I'm sorry, I don't recall the gentleman's name, one that they got on the phone from Texas to talk about what he had seen. Now, this is a rock station, and these guys have their persona, which is that they make fun of absolutely everybody. It doesn't have to do with UFOs. They are this way. And so they did their thing. But, you know, Rich was very serious, and they actually did treat him pretty respectfully. They kidded around with him. And they made a lot of jokes about the sighting, but then when they got this man, this witness on, to talk about what he had seen, they were pretty respectful to him, too. And when he was done, they said, gosh, it really sounds like, you know, maybe there's something to this. Maybe he saw something. And I thought, wow, that's a major step, because these guys normally, what they do is to make fun of absolutely everybody. And that's just their thing. And they said, in fact, that that's their persona, that's what they do on the air, that's just, that's how they are. So if even these guys were saying, they were being very polite to this man while he was on the phone, and they said, wow, you know, maybe there is something to it. And that, I thought, was huge. Because here are these people who essentially make their living by mocking people, and even they couldn't do it. But there's a new age in actually listening to people and thinking about what they're saying. And people are starting to take this seriously. And between that and the sighting at Chicago O'Hare, you know, which again was seen by so many people. And for a long time we kept hearing this, the one argument was, well, where are all the pictures? Now, how come nobody has any pictures? And then the pictures started to come out. And well, here they are.
Yeah, I think pictures will come out from O'Hara. I think that we'll see what that thing really looked like. But look at the Phoenix Lights, if you want to look at something. You're going to tell all those people they had a mass hallucination. You know, Phoenix is, to me, and I'm very close to Dr. Lynn Katai, who was the person that actually filmed the Phoenix Lights and did the documentary. That was a mass consciousness wake-up call. I mean, that thing was a big boomerang that went over their heads and hid the stars. I mean, it went right over the city. And the, you know, nobody took those people seriously, maybe, until Governor Fife Symington came forth and said he saw it, too.
Yeah.
Okay,
the official story at that time was that it was geese.
Pardon?
Said hello. They said it was geese flying in formation because...
Oh, no, but that's totally ignorant, you know.
I couldn't believe when I read that. People actually said that was geese.
I mean, Stephenville maybe has like 10 witnesses. Phoenix had something like, I don't know, 100.
Oh, you know, it was a good video of it.
It had, and not only that, but you want to add the film footage, those things sitting over the city of Phoenix. I think, you know, but if you really look at that, those lights over the city of Phoenix and the fact that they're moving and so forth, you know, it must be embarrassing for those people, like at Sky Harbor Airport.
I was just thinking that. In fact, Rich said that when he was on the local radio show, that, you know, he would absolutely hate to be the guy in the Air Force who's in a town where something like this happens. Because, you know, everybody's going to call you, and you got to say something. You can't say, yeah, they're UFOs, or yes, they're aliens, we know they are. But what else are you going to say that sounds plausible? Like, there isn't anything.
Well, actually, I go one step further and say, well, if it was small, I'd say it was our stuff, and we were testing, you know, a new stealth kind of bomber or anything. But it'd be stupid to be testing it in a major city. Okay, that's
stupidity. And it was the big argument about the O'Hare thing. Was, you know, they tried to come out and say it was something of ours that we're testing. We said, over a major airport?
I know.
Was it the biggest airport in the country?
I know. There's no logic to that. But just like the one in Stephenville, which was a mile long, I mean, that's a big UFO, a mile-long UFO.
Yeah.
And,
it's like on the Star Trek, where they used to have the Borg ships.
Right.
I don't know if you ever watched Star Trek.
Yeah, they were huge. They were
huge.
And the guy that, one of the witnesses that was a hunter, he said he was going to take his rifle and shoot at it, and then he changed his mind. And, you know, I thought, my God, you know, what kind of thinking is that? You take the rifle, you're going to shoot at this thing?
Well,
you know, is that how we treat the people that visit us? We shoot first and ask questions later. You know, is that how we treat them? Let's shoot at it, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't want this to sound like I'm being disrespectful to anybody. I don't mean it this way. But if you are someone who's in the habit of being out with a gun in your hand, then, yeah, maybe when you see something that looks like it might be a threat, maybe using that gun is the first thing you think of.
Yeah, but it's a mile long.
It wouldn't be for me, but, well, then he changed his mind when he realized that, now, didn't he? So, wait a minute, I don't think this is going to do any good.
Yeah, it might be terrifying. What you need to look at, though, is that UFO saw you, I'm sure, in the forest with your gun, and did nothing to you.
Exactly. But you know what? If I were out by myself in the woods and I looked up and saw a mile-long anything over my head, it would take me a minute to think clearly, I think. I admired the guy for coming to himself before he actually did shoot at it.
Yeah, I was going to say, it is probably a conscious shock for all those people.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's like puts you in shock. And I can imagine what the people in Phoenix thought.
Yeah.
They probably thought the same thing, too. What I'd like to see in ufology, Karen, and I have to say this, is the people that are talking about Stephenville start talking about Phoenix and start talking about San Diego and start talking about O'Hare. It should not just be Stephenville. It should be all of the major sightings we've had. And this is just the United States. If you want to go over to England, to Rendlesham Forest, if you want to go to Belgium, and the pilot from Turan that actually did shoot at it, he testified at the Washington Press Club. You know, I mean, I don't expect people to go out of the country, but at least talk about all the things that's happened here, mm-hmm. if they could tie it together. So I'm hoping the journalists and the media get a clue and tie it together with all the other sightings we've had that are real.
Mm-hmm.
That would be good. Then we would talk about all of them and all of it.
Yeah.
Instead, just all of it, all of them, instead of just this one time.
Yeah, that's another thing that frustrates me when I talk to people who are not UFO researchers or who don't know very much about UFOs. When I talk to them about this, you know, they find out that I'm interested in UFOs, and then the questions just start to come out. First of all, they all think I'm insane. But, you know, then we chat a little bit, and they'll be saying things like, well, you know, nobody... How come it's always like one guy out in the backwoods of Kentucky someplace who sees this and nobody else ever does? Or why aren't there pictures? Well, there are pictures. Have you looked for them? And there are lots of witnesses. Or they say, why don't they ever appear over big cities? Well, they do. You know, you want to look at the Linda Cortile abduction case in Manhattan? How many witnesses were there to that? You want to look at the Phoenix Lights? How many people got video of that? How many people witnessed it? Now we have the San Diego case. How many people saw that? Are those big enough cities?
That's a really good question, and that's what we need to think like that, Karen. Because if we think like that, we become much more intelligent in our questioning. Because that is it. Those are the cities. Are they big enough cities? Do you want to research this? And the question is that not everybody's interested in UFOs. Because when I'm out just having dinner or I'm out socially, I don't bring it up. I really do not bring it up. I only talk about it in circles where I know the people are interested. So it's real. I don't know, do you bring it up when you go out to dinner with people you don't know or whatever?
No, but I used to have a job where I would have to ask for time off to go to the conferences. And, you know, when I explained I'm going to need, 5 days off because I'm going to a UFO conference, that would kind of bring it up.
Oh, okay. So, part of your work.
Oh, really? Tell me about it. Sometimes I'd think, well, okay, yeah. There were some people that I talked to about it, and I'd say, yeah, there are a lot of scientists here, and they discuss the possibility of propulsion systems. Like, what if UFOs were real? What would they be using to get here? And where might they be coming from? And when you present it in that way, people think, wow, that sounds scientific, and that sounds pretty pretty mainstream, actually. That sounds kind of cool. So if I can talk about it that way, people are actually interested in listening. But thank goodness I don't have that job anymore, so I don't have to deal with the eye rolling every time I go in.
You don't have any eye rolling. No, you have this job, which is interesting because you can connect the dots. Which,
yes.
The name of my book.
Yeah. Well, this one of the things I love about this is I can talk to people who are experts in all these different fields. And I learned so much from chatting with people like you who have taken all this time, and you've gone out and talked to these people. You've actually gone and done investigation and research and interviews. And, you know, here I'm just sitting at home chatting on the phone with some really fascinating people. So I get the easy part of the job.
Well, the reason why I go out and interview people, and in my new book I have an interview with Dan Burrish on time travel and dimensional gates. I mean, I don't want to open that discussion necessarily.
Wow.
But the thing is, the reason why I go out there, I have to see if the people are telling me the truth. I want to look at them. And then I don't just go out there once. I went out there, let's see, I think I went out there three times to do an interview. I go out there more than once. I went to Las Vegas to do that interview. And all the other people, I meet them. The one I did with Clark McClellan, he's in Orlando in Florida, used to work for NASA 22 years. By the way, Clark is one person that told me that when he went on vacation in Belize, that NASA, some people at NASA had told him to look up in the skies, and when he was on vacation, he saw two UFOs, one on the wake of the other one in the sky, and they were UFOs, but because he had been told to look up in the sky, he knew it was our technology.
Oh,
and actually, that's on his website, www.stargatechronicles.com. And that, you know, if he's been told, and he's a technician with NASA, he's been told to look up in the sky because he got stuff, then that makes me really wonder. But before even doing his story, I flew to Orlando and spent a week down there with him, and he's come out with some incredible, incredible testimony, and not only on my website, but on Jeff Brandt's and so forth. He's put out a lot of disclosure material about NASA's involvement with the UFO phenomenon, because not only did Gordon Cooper see a UFO land and the film footage was taken away from him, but a lot of the astronauts are now coming forth saying, yeah, there's stuff out there we can't figure out. Mm. And of course, Edgar Mitchell, who is one who really wants transparency or the truth, he's done a lot for the cause, and Edgar Mitchell walked on the moon.
Yeah, and he has actually come out and said several times that, you know, there are things, that he's seen things, that these things exist, that we need to be looking into it. And that's another one that the media just does not pick up on.
Well, I'm convinced that there are probably people, for instance, I think that there's a battle of who wants to tell and who doesn't want to tell. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think they may be hoping that Edgar Mitchell will not, you know, let's not look at him, let's not... You know, when you mention Edgar Mitchell, he's a very credible person.
Yeah.
So
his credibility.
Yeah, his credibility. Also, the ex-minister of defense, Paul Hollier.
Yeah.
He's a minister of defense.
Yeah.
You know, get a clue. He's a man who would never say UFOs were as real as airplanes unless he knew they were.
Right.
And,
I mean, it's bad enough that they try to discredit all these pilots by saying, oh, well, what they saw was a temperature inversion or it was a cloud formation. That was my personal favorite with the Chicago O'Hare sighting. They kept saying, oh, it was clouds. Excuse me, I think pilots would know what clouds look like. It would affect their lives and the lives of the people on their plane if they don't know what a cloud formation looks like.
Yeah, and I don't know, did you see the last Larry King Live with Stanton Friedman and James Fox?
I didn't see
that. They had to put your resident skeptic there.
Uh-huh.
And this gentleman kept saying that these weren't trained observers, that the pilots were not trained observers.
What do you mean they're not trained observers? These are people who are up there, and they could die if they don't observe what's around them properly. I mean, under those conditions, how could they not be considered good observers?
Well, it was a stupid argument. I wish he hadn't used it, because that completely killed his credibility, the fact that, you know, these weren't trained observers, but he was a trained observer. What is a trained observer? If, for instance, we are living in a multidimensional universe, and what you're looking up there, for instance, just think, if you were wearing glasses that could see in the ultraviolet, you know, in the infrared, the way the Campeche, Mexico case, where those poor pilots saw in the infrared 11 UFOs because they had a beautiful infrared camera. Now, were you telling me that a trained observer is looking up the sky and sees what they see, but if you put on infrared glasses and they've done this experiment, then you see something else? That doesn't have a lot of implications there. When the Campeche case came out in Mexico City, that we had that film footage that Jaime Poisson put around the world, the implications that we're looking at a cloudless sky, but you put the infrared glasses on, they did do this experiment, and there's a light there or there's a craft there that you're not seeing, I think that's major. So you can't play the game of trained observers unless you're going to go out there with infrared glasses.
Well, right. If there's so much out there that our eyes are just not equipped to see anyway. And that doesn't mean these things don't exist. I was just explaining this to my kids years ago. It's just, you know, radio signals are there. We can't see them, but that doesn't mean they're not there. It means if you build the right kind of receiver, then you will be able to detect them. They're there all the time. We just, our eyes don't see them.
Well, the other thing, because you're walking me into something else again.
Uh-oh.
is the orb phenomena, the orbs, because on my book cover, it says, how do you speak to a ball of light? There's a photograph of a real orb. And orbs are not reflections from the lens of the camera. Orbs are some kind of energy that appears with digital cameras. Now, when I was at the San Diego conference just now, we got an orb with a regular camera on regular film. So there was some kind of energy in the room. And so we're talking now about things that we're not able to see with our eyes. Maybe psychics can see them, but we're photographing now with really sensitive digital cameras. And that whole orb situation is going to blast open, I think, in the next couple of years. And we're going to look at disembodied entities. We're going to look at energies that are in the room and all kinds of other things that are going to happen around light phenomenon. And I think that some light phenomena is intelligent. So that's why I have that title for you, Speak to a Ball of Light.
Now, do you know that at the X conference, you brought Monsignor Calducci?
Yeah.
We took pictures there. I'm sure you remember because you were in this large group of speakers. We took these pictures of, like, all the speakers there.
Yeah.
And I took a picture from one end of the room. There was a huge crowd of people taking pictures as well. And in my photo, right in front of you, there's an orb. And I thought, oh, isn't that funny? It was probably a dust particle, but isn't it funny? It looks like there's an orb right in front of Paula. And then later I spoke with a friend of ours who had been down at the far end of the room in the same group of people taking pictures of the same group. She got an orb in the same spot, like in the same position, but hers was from a different angle. So it made it look like there actually was something in that spot. But it was, you know, it was off on the left side of her picture because she was way down at one end of the room, and it was sort of in the center of my picture because I was almost right in front of you.
Well, I'd love to have that picture.
Yeah, I will ask her. I might have both, actually.
Yeah, I'd love to have that picture, but I gave somebody my camera, and an orb came out. I was standing next to Monsignor Balducci, and an orb came out next to Balducci on my camera.
Yeah.
So I got a picture of an orb next to Balducci. I don't know if it's the same orb. I'd like to see what you got. I mean,
yeah, it may very well be, because you two were standing right next to each other in the picture, and I remember thinking, I mean, at that time, everybody was talking about orbs. Everyone was getting orbs in their pictures, and I thought, oh, please. You know, everyone's getting them. It's got to be dust. And then I looked at ours, and I thought, oh, isn't that funny? We got one. And then our friend showed it to us, and I thought, oh, my God, because it was as if there was an object in front of you in that picture. That's exactly where it would have appeared from her perspective. So,
well, I'd like to see that.
I'll track that down.
Yeah. Well, this is just opening another door, okay, to thinking about things. You know, that maybe all entities or all energy levels are not, you know, embodied. You know, that we always say, like the police, that we are spirits in a material world. You know, Sting says that in a song. Well,
yeah.
Maybe we are spirits in a material world. I mean, we have to materialize and have a body. But maybe a spirit or an energy or even, you know, an alien energy or whatever may not need to take on a body. And so we're going to need to look at all of this. I mean, because, you know, we can't just throw this stuff out, I mean, and say it's not real. My dream is, again, to study this like you would anthropology, sociology, history, to study it in a university setting. And that's why I love teaching the online classes at the Exopolitics Institute. I'm teaching a class right now on whistleblowers and cosmology. You know, So you know, there are online classes in this, and I'd like, you know, I want to look at it all. I think people should be reading and studying this.
Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody wanted to find out more about your classes, that was the Exopolitics Institute.
Yeah, it's on my website. It says register now, and it talks about the classes that are at the Institute. And I do one on whistleblowers and one on quantum cosmology, which is, you know, going into the next step of exoconsciousness, of being conscious that we're part of a universe. So that's on my website. And it's on Dr. Michael Sala's. It's connected with Dr. Michael Sala and the Exopolitics Institute. And, you know, if we do this, if we study, I mean, I'd like to put it in the University of California, University of Arizona, University of Rochester. If we would put exopolitics or the study of extraterrestrial presence in these universities, then it would become legitimate and we'd start looking at it seriously.
Wow, wouldn't that be a wonderful day?
Well, wouldn't that be an intelligent day?
Absolutely. I mean, it's something that we need to be doing. You know, we've gone so far beyond wondering what those lights are in the sky. Really, and each person has to go through all that. That's partly the problem, that each person has to go through the stages of accepting that there are lights in the sky and then accepting that those lights can't be explained by ball lightning or weather balloons. And, you know, there are each of these steps that everyone's got to make this progress through. And some of those steps are really difficult, like accepting the fact that there really are beings who are not from Earth. That's hard.
Well, I know that's hard. And it could be scary or it could be exciting. It depends on how you look at life. I mean,
yeah. It
could be either one or the other. Or, you know, it could be a little bit of both.
Yeah.
but you know, some people aren't going to want to know, and it's okay. I mean, I think whoever is listening to you right now, whoever is tuned in, are the people that want to know. And I can't emphasize that there's more than enough information. And for these people that are tuned in, they should really go on my website because I have so much information there from all over the world. It's not just in America. This is a worldwide phenomenon. So I have all stories from all over the world. And you started asking me about the Maurizio Cavallo case in northern Italy. Well, that is a contact case that happened in 1981 where he saw these beings that look like us on a ship, and they call themselves a confederation, and he asked to take pictures of their faces. And they said okay if he could keep them for 10 years. So, in other words, they tested him. They said, don't release it for 10 years. And he gave me permission to print some of the faces of the human-looking aliens. So for people that are interested in that, the human-looking aliens, the Maurizio Cavallo interview plus the Maurizio Cavallo story is incredible. And that book has just been translated into English and will be available this year.
Wow. Will that be available at Laughlin?
No, because I don't think we'll get it done in time for Laughlin.
Okay.
It may be available for the Transformational Conference on Hawaii, because that's the Exopolitics Conference. It may be available then, but if it's available, I'll definitely put it on my website so people can buy that book. And it talks about his terrifying encounters in the beginning, and then his accepting it, and what these people from the planet of Clarion told him about the Earth, about their involvement, and about future Earth changes.
And when did this contact take place? Was
1981.
Okay, so that was 10 years ago.
Well, yeah, it was more. Yeah, a little bit more.
Okay.
But it was...
I just want to make sure we're not getting anybody in trouble here. Then.
No.
Okay.
No. It was 1981, but the pictures couldn't be released, but he told his story, wrote his first book before that, because they want disclosure. I mean, they want to tell people that it isn't as they think. The Earth is not what they believe it is. I mean, that there are underwater bases. These people have an underwater base off the coast of Genoa. And they're people. They're not grays, and they're not balls of light. They're people. And so what we're looking at here is the disclosure of a lot of different witnesses. Now, you were present at the X conference, and did you see the daylight footage of the UFO that Mahmoud Mousan showed?
in Milano. That was Maurizio Cavallo footage. That thing was really close. It was daylight. It was, you could see the portals practically in that footage.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're allowing themselves to be photographed. They're allowing their ships to be photographed. And they're allowing their ships to be reported about in the Stephenville case, because the mother ship didn't have to come down that far. A mile-long ship is a big ship.
Yeah. That's one thing that always strikes me, and this is a good thing to ask you, in fact. What are your thoughts on the secrecy that has been surrounding these other beings who have been here? I mean, if they didn't want the secrecy, they could end it any moment. I mean, it's like the cliche says, all they'd have to do is land on the White House lawn and it would be over.
Well,
so there must be some reason that they want it to continue as well. Although now it seems like they're beginning to change, that they're kind of easing us into, ending this secrecy.
Well, if you were an alien and you're coming to a planet, who would represent this planet?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where would you go? You go to the Chinese because they have more people?
Yeah.
Would you go to the United Nations because supposedly they are the effective governing body? Would you go to the United States because they supposedly are powerful?
Yeah.
Who are you going to talk to? I think that these beings are just as confused as we are.
They're able to fly over and shut off all of our missiles, but they're confused about who to go to. That's interesting.
Yeah, because who would you go to? Who are they going to? Then finish the question. Who are they going to? They are going to the common people. They are going to the people that have been abducted, the people that are listening to this show. They're going to the regular citizens of the planet. They are not going to the top-level brass. They are not going to the United Nations. They're not going to one country. They're going to the people. And this is really interesting, the fact that they're going to the people and that they don't want to push it. Because my big analogy is, what if you had five sightings over five international airports, like O'Hare? What if they all appeared on the international airports? We would interpret that as an invasion. And that you don't want. You don't want, they're smart. You don't want it to look like the invasion of the Clarions, or the invasion of, these people. You can't do that. It's scary if you look at that. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do.
That might be interpreted as an invasion.
Yeah, I can see exactly what you're saying now that you put it that way. I never thought of it that way before.
Yeah, we don't. What if you had, like, your whole city was filled with clarions?
Yeah.
It would sound like a science fiction movie, like, the invasion of the body snatchers or some such thing like that.
Yeah.
It would be really scary. So they don't do that. They don't do it that way. They talk to you. They will pick you, or they pick Maurizio Cavallo, and they'll talk to you, and they'll say, look, you write a book. We're talking to you. We're going to give you some pictures. We're going to show our ship. You can photograph us, and you talk to your own people about us.
So that raises the question of people who, contactees who have been contacted, and I use the term contactees separate from abductees. These are people who have more willing contact and a more positive experience. People are actually having good experiences contacting these beings, whoever they may be and wherever they may be from, and they come back and say, well, they're here to help us, and they're here because they tell us that we're having problems with our environment and we need to fix it and all of this, which sounds really nice. It just seems strange to me that any beings would have come as far, or, maybe not even spatially, but coming from another dimension, would go to the trouble of coming here to say, your environment's really messed up. And then it just seems to me that after this much time, because we have quite a history of these beings telling us, your environment's really messed up, you need to do something, Well, we haven't fixed it. It's still really messed up. In fact, it's getting worse exponentially. It just seems to me that if they went to all the trouble to come here and tell us that, if it was that important to them, that they might have stepped in and done something about it themselves by now. And the fact that they haven't done that makes me feel that maybe that's not really what they're here for.
Well, I don't know that they haven't done that. I mean, when I did the interview, and I'm going to write a book about this with Dr. Michael Wolf Cravant, and I will mention his last name now, and he wrote The Catchers of Heaven, he made it clear that he knew that that there was an extra effort by the extraterrestrial, the Galactic Federation, to deflect comets to help the planet in really times of need. There is also a report out of Russia that what Chernobyl happened, there was a UFO right over the building that absorbed a lot of the radiation out of that, and there's a picture of that. I've seen it in Italy, where there was a UFO sighting over Chernobyl. So, in a lot of ways, the warning against the nuclear problem. The possibility of deflection of comets and asteroids and so forth. And if you want to go one step further, Karen, and it gets really hairy, the manipulation of DNA with the indigo children and the hybrid children is maybe an effort to change things. It's an effort that they're making to change or to deal with humanity. And it gets into all that other stuff about DNA manipulation, the new generation that's coming through, the crystal children, the hybrid children, all of this stuff. And maybe we have had interference, but we are not fully aware of it.
That's an excellent point. That, you know, here I'm saying, well, they haven't done anything, so what are they really here for? Well, maybe they have, and I just don't see it.
Well, I know that there is direct downloading. I mean, direct downloading. A lot of the contactees have altered IQs after contact, and have a lot of intuitive ability and psychokinesis and ESP, and maybe that's a gift. I mean, maybe that would be part of the gift. To be used to save the planet. I mean, who knows? Somebody should be doing some research in this area. This isn't necessarily my area.
Yeah. I remember reading a questionnaire once from one of the abductee organizations. You know, it's one of those pre-screening things, like, could you possibly be an abductee yourself? And you answer this several pages of questions. And some of the questions had to do with whether you're interested in environmentalism, and how long in your life you've been interested in saving or cleaning up the environment. And they said a lot of abductees are, and they get involved in starting to see the world as this larger thing. And, you know, your world expands. It's not just about yourself anymore. And you start wanting to look after the planet, and you start wanting to fix things. And I've also heard a lot of mention of people developing psychic abilities, even temporarily, following an abduction experience. And it's funny, until you mentioned that, I had forgotten all about it.
Well, notice the kids. I mean, I'm noticing the kids right now, children, small and all different ages, that are very aware, like they're awake. They're here for a reason, and they have like a mission of some kind, and I think that could be part of it. Now, there was a book written years ago called The Star People by Brad Steiger, Brad and Sherry Steiger. I mean, I think people could still get this book. And that does have, like, a three-page questionnaire. And that does list physical attributes, like a blood type and an extra rib and an extra vertebrae and just different things. And it mentions some physical attributes, too, of the star people, quote-unquote, the star people. So, you know, a lot of people think they're hybrid star people. And,
wow.
I've never done research on this, but it would be one of the ways to subtly change humanity is to change the genetics of humanity.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to check out that book. And on that note, we're actually going to have to wrap it up because we just finished our two-hour conversation. Do you believe it? I've had way too much fun talking with you tonight, Paula.
Well, it's been fun talking with you. I really enjoyed it. And say hi and bye to Joe, too. It's because of him that we can do this.
Yeah. Thank you, Joe. I know we can't hear him talking, but I know he can hear us.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, until next time. And, Paula, I'll see you next month in Atlantic City. Because Rick is speaking there, and I'll be there with him. And then he's going the week after to the UFO Congress, so you'll see him there. I'm not going to that one. Somebody's got to be with the kids sometime.
Yeah, well, okay, well, we'll share a glass of wine. Thank
okay.
you so much for this encounter.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thanks so much for being on the show again, and thank you again for being willing to change your schedule like that and come on such short notice. I really appreciate it.
Well, I had fun.
Great. Too.
Okay.
We will have to keep doing this again because you're going to keep coming out with these great books and I want to hear more about them. So now I've got the next show ready to come on, though, and I'm sure they want me to stop talking and get out of the way. So. Thanks so much, everyone. This is Through the Keyhole on Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, Karen Dolan, and my guest tonight has been Paula Harris. She's absolutely wonderful, and I'm getting her on back here again as soon as we can do it. Have a great evening, everyone. Talk to you next week.